everyone, and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman, also called H, short for Ho Ho Ho.
And I'm Father Christmas.
Christmas with a Q, though.
Christmas with a Q. Q-R-I-S-T.
Which is also the name of your holiday album of classic holiday favorites.
You know what? You have inspired me, H. I might record a holiday hit and somehow get it to you, and we will figure out maybe how to put it on the show.
We usually try to keep the banter at the beginning kind of brief to get to the actual meat of the episode. And because it gives me less to edit later on. But I did want to point out, and I always like to do this whenever I find an interesting game that really catches my eye, something that is perhaps a little bit more obscure and maybe wouldn't have gotten any kind of a spotlight otherwise. I happened across a trailer today posted on the Nintendo Switch Reddit, which I like to check in the mornings at work just to see if anything... if anything on the Nintendo Switch is burning down, you know, so I can go and address it.
It's all been hacked. It's all falling apart, H.
Yeah, that's right. It's important to know. But anyways, this is an interesting game that I was kind of... it's one of those instances where I'm upset that I didn't think of it first. But this is called Degrees of Separation. And they just posted a trailer. It looks like it's going to be out in February of next year. And it appears to be a game split between two characters. I'm not sure whether it's a one-player game where you're controlling both characters like Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, or whether it's a two-player game. But the screen is split in the middle, kind of like the typical Toe Jam and Earl slash Lego Star Wars. Like, the screen split is kind of reactive to where each character is in a relation to each other on the screen.
Mm.
And so, like, based on where you're standing, the screen will be split either vertically or diagonally or horizontally, just whatever it needs to do to adjust to where the characters are positioned. But the interesting thing about that is that one of the characters exists in a world of cold, and the other character seems to, at least from watching the video on mute on my work computer, exists in a world of like summer or of light, of warmth.
Mm.
And so as you position each other in relation to one another, the different portions of the screen are kind of taken up by your element, and you can use that to solve puzzles, to cause things to exist that wouldn't have existed in the other, I don't want to call it timeline, but you get what I mean. And so it seems to do all these really clever things with the split in the screen. So, you know, I think that it's one that I'm going to be keeping my eye on as we get closer to February. And maybe we can even kind of salvage some of those ideas and use them for future pitches. Anyways, that is called Degrees of Separation. So check that one out. That looks to be one worth following. And the art seems to be very lovely as well. Kind of gives me a Broken Age type of feel.
That's awesome.
Well, anyways, that's a good warm-up to our completely original pitches today. So Q, why don't you start us off this week?
H, I know I'm about to start, but boy, oh boy, that sounded a little sarcastic. Our completely original. It makes me think, you know, maybe I'm just guilty because are you ready for my pitch this week?
Okay, what do you have for us?
A definitive. It was announced recently at the Game Awards that we would be getting another sequel, yet another guaranteed sequel to Mortal Kombat.
Mm.
And so I wanted to imagine something that could be a crazy take on Mortal Kombat, something they might not do.
I was hoping you were going to say Crazy Taxi because I was very curious.
I'm doing a Crazy Taxi Mortal Kombat.
Get over there.
So obviously we're both playing a lot of Smash Brothers. World of Light has me totally jazzed. I know some people don't care for it, but I was imagining a Mortal Kombat with a little bit of format of World of Light, where you can kind of move around the map and you face different challenges, or challengers even. And as you do so, you are actually starting off with a core team of Mortal Kombat heroes. And as you go through the adventure, as one of these heroes dies, or perhaps perishes in battle, you lose them. permanently, potentially. And so you have to fight people and perform fatalities to sort of capture their souls. And then you can use souls and spend souls to either resurrect former teammates or maybe even resurrect former foes that you can take control of and bring to the battlefield. And I have a bunch of other weird features that we can kind of talk about through the pitch, but why don't we start there?
All right, starting the clock. It's clock spelled with a K, of course.
I was hoping you would get to that joke.
So this is essentially a Mortal Kombat Nuzlocke run. I've never been confident on the pronunciation of that, but it's the idea in Pokemon where players want a little bit of extra challenge where they capture the first Pokemon that they encounter in any new area, any area that has a title card. And then if their Pokemon are ever defeated, then they release them. So essentially it's like a permadeath run through Pokemon. Mm. You're kind of following similar ideas here in kind of a one character is a life, so to speak, and you don't want to run out because then you're kind of permanently out of luck.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I like the idea of, you know, what some of the sort of streamline that Pokemon Let's Go has done, where I can kind of see the little characters on the map. I love being able to see, oh, that's a little mini chibi Shang Tsung or something. And so I'm going to walk up to him and fight him. But, oh, I know that I'm down like Luke Cage or whoever. Sorry, Luke Cage and Johnny Cage. Now I've got all these names rattling around in my head. Yeah, I was thinking kind of see the characters, approach them if you want, fight them. Different characters could potentially be worth a different amount of souls as you battle and capture them. But I was also thinking that scattered around the map, this is a little bit different from the World of Light stuff, but scattered around the map, you could also place a bunch of really fun classic Mortal Kombat side stuff. So test your mights, and might as well be test your sights and all the like crazy offshoots they've done. I even like the idea of bringing like puzzle combat in there, that weird match three thing that they had done in their sort of early 3D phase, or maybe mid-teen 3D phase. But you can kind of do all these different events, and so you get a lot of variety in a single player campaign, and you could potentially wrap it in a sort of classic Mortal Kombat story, but maybe you do, you know, just go in a different direction with it.
All right. So this is interesting. There's some things that I'm excited about here and some reservations that I have. And so I'm going to try to hit the reservations, just get those off the map. So we can start with a clean slate. So one of the things about fighting games is that, first of all, I love the idea of kind of constantly cycling through characters, never focusing too much on having a main, so to speak, and getting experienced with all of the characters. I think that's one of the major advantages of single player modes in fighting games, and especially in Mortal Kombat, the games that tend to be, at least in the recent years, a little bit more story focused. It cycles you through multiple characters, gives you time to play as them and learn about your enemies. So one of the reservations that I have is that if you're on a permadeath type system, you're not really ever getting a chance to become comfortable with the fighter that you're playing as. And there's so many fighting games. A lot of the most interesting characters are the real technical fighters, the ones that have some sort of an interesting gimmick that takes some time to really wrap your mind around. And if, for instance, if Smash Bros. Worked like this, and I was given, you know, until my first death to really get my head around Captain Olimar, for instance, I don't feel like I would really get the most out of that character since, you know, it takes a little bit of time to adjust to his moveset, to adjust to even going to a slower character from a faster character. Sometimes you can position yourself wrong because you thought you could close a gap that you really can't, and you end up getting punished and then losing a fight that you probably could have won if you had just a little bit more experience with that character. So what can we do to give players experience before putting everything on the line?
Maybe we could leverage the idea of the Mortal Kombat Towers experience. So once you do potentially you're navigating around the map, you can kind of battle individuals that are, you know, medium to low stakes for gathering souls and like getting enough resources to be able to resurrect fighters or potentially heal fighters. And then when you kind of enter into one of the towers, that's a little bit more like a dungeon of sorts, where you kind of have to climb the tower, and as you lose your fighters, you either have to spend souls to resurrect them, or you need to spend souls to heal them, or something like that. So you, what you do is you kind of lower the stakes of the individual fights a little bit, still keeping it fun, fresh. Maybe you do similar to World of Light. Mortal Kombat once had a mode called Test Your Luck, where they did all sorts of crazy modifiers on the combat. So maybe you can have different kind of fun test your luck packages that engage in the sort of moment to moment, and then people kind of work their way up to a tower, which is a little bit more lose a fighter, they're out for good. Once you get through the tower, maybe all the fighters come back, or maybe you make it so that when you get through a tower, you end with enough souls to resurrect an important fighter. Like, I'm trying to make sure that they're, you know, in the, when you do risk it, you kind of risk a lot, but then when you're learning and you're coming up to speed with a character, there's plenty of reps you can put in.
Now, in Mortal Kombat, not every round ends with a fatality, and so maybe there's some sort of a resources on either side of the battle. You're essentially kind of going up against an enemy army, and as you win fights, then you build up a meter on your side, and as they win fights, then they build up a meter, and your characters are maybe temporarily taken out of the battle when you lose a fight, but once they have enough of the resources, then they can perform a fatality at the end of the round. And for you, that kind of permanently takes that enemy off of the rotation and gets you closer to your end goal. And for them, it permanently removes whoever you're using from your roster. And so there's a nice kind of risk reward of using your favorite fighter to hopefully get through a battle that you would find challenging otherwise, but you're also risking losing them permanently.
What I like about that is when I think about the mechanic of Mortal Kombat and people literally being taken out, or you're kind of fighting against the Shao Kahn army, or insert, you know, army name here. I like the idea of potentially having a resource pool, because I think one of the more recent Mortal Kombats made an attempt to charge you. You could buy like fatality packs, essentially, that would give you one button fatalities, which is really gross sounding, but if that was earnable in a fun way, I think it might feel more satisfying. So you could maybe earn, you could either get good at fatalities, and maybe the fatalities are really hard to perform, or you have to have certain fatalities performed on certain characters, and you can either go through that grind, or you kind of work your way up and earn fatality tokens, and then fatalities become more rare, right? They become cooler and more special, because when you see a fatality 100 times, it loses its impact, doesn't it?
Yeah, so that's interesting. So you have kind of a constantly rotating cast of fighters. You're forced to play with new characters. Another thing that permadeath in fighting games that I get a little nervous about is that it might either kind of level out the difficulty curve, where we're afraid to ever kind of jack the difficulty curve up too high, because then it might just end players' entire single player run, or it does end a single player run, and players are, you know, they put 15 hours into the mode so far, and then they get to the point where all their fighters are defeated, and then what, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you'd really have to be smart about how much resources you're giving the player, right? You'd have to keep them on a sort of quote unquote steady diet. What I really like about, I know I've been citing Nintendo games all year, but it's been a tremendous year for Nintendo games. Pokemon Go, or Let's Go rather, makes you have they're almost always Pokeballs to be had, you know, which is a little strange. And of course you can go and buy them, but it seems like the game paces it out well enough to make it feel like you're never really in that dire of a strait, or at least so far from what I played. So I wonder if there's a pacing of the sort of souls or currency that you can earn to make that feel good.
It could be a like maybe you always have weak fighters in reserve, kind of like in a lot of first-person shooters, you always have a pistol with unlimited ammo that barely does any damage just because, you know, you don't ever want to find yourself completely out of luck. And so maybe there are some fighters like a create a fighter type mode that just randomly generates fighters that can get you there, but they aren't going to be preferable to the fighters that are like actually covetable, the ones that are the named fighters. And then you have to kind of earn those. But again, if a player loses all of the fighters to a really difficult boss and we put them in a situation where it's even more difficult to defeat them at that point, that's kind of... not a super kind difficulty curve, but you know, we can think about that later. We spent all the time that we can on that one.
Oh no.
And we have to throw that back out to the community and see what they can come up with. See if they can finish this one off. What are we going to name this Mortal Kombat?
Oh my God. There's so many Mortal Kombat names. I figured I would do a little fun pun with the fighting game call to action that happens when you are handily defeated. Mortal Kombat continues.
That was not the one that I thought you were going to choose.
Okay, tell me what you thought.
I thought you were going to call it like Mortal Kombat Finish Him or something like that.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. No. I mean, like, I have seen the continue screen so many times in fighting games. I feel like if we spell it with a K, we've got some gold on our hands.
All right. That's cool. I like that. Well, let's get to my pitch today. What I am bringing in is a single room Zelda-like puzzles. It's kind of going through dungeons where there's some sort of a puzzle that can be solved in a single room, like a top-down, you know, like an Oracle of Ages, Legend of Zelda Classic, A Link to the Past, you know. Those types of Zelda games.
How old are we that we have to call it Legend of Zelda Classic, by the way?
Yeah, that's right. A Link Between Worlds felt like it was just a couple years ago. Anyways, you're in these temples, you are taking it one room at a time, and there's always kind of a sequence of events that you have to figure out to solve these puzzles, but the way that it's structured is in a music sequencer type of format. So if you imagine something like Sound Shapes or Lumines, where there's a sequencer line that always moves from left to right and up along a beat, and perhaps all of the objects in the room can kind of trigger musical riffs to play when it passes over them, just kind of like a regular music sequencer. You have to choose the kind of series of events that will be triggered by the music sequencer moving from left to right. And it can be kind of multiple rounds or something, but you have to essentially kind of queue up every step that you need to take to solve the puzzle before the, you know, and then it will essentially kind of play out musically and dynamically when you choose to, I don't know, hit record or hit play on the set of actions that you queued up. And so you just move through these dungeons, one room at a time, solving puzzles, just kind of interacting with the world differently than you would in a regular Zelda game. So let's start the clock there.
Even though the format is so fresh, it does feel like it could be at home in a Zelda game, right? Zelda's always had themes of music, and it's had themes of, you know, obviously puzzles and getting things in the right order. What I'm curious about is the way the sequencer is activated, because I sort of, when I think of a music sequencer, I think of like a set of binary switches. So is like, if a dungeon is like a grid, and if you way zoomed out like a Google map zoom out of the dungeon and you saw all the rooms splayed out on a map, is it like solving a potential puzzle in one room, like turn on that tile and you can kind of go around turning on and off certain tiles to generate certain songs?
That's kind of interesting as well.
He's like,
what
no.
I was thinking about. No, it's cool. I want to circle back to that. I want to, my kind of original idea was that every room is kind of self-contained, almost like a Sound Shapes type of setup where there's a line that moves from left to right kind of in accordance with time. And as it passes over something, then that becomes active in a way. And in Sound Shapes, the way that it worked was that you can kind of place objects all around the screen. And then the farther right it was, the later in the musical measure it would play. And then the farther up it was, higher on the screen, the higher of a note that it would play. And so you can place various instruments and create your own songs that you can then turn into platformer levels. And so, you know, I was thinking that the line that is moving throughout the screen is kind of constantly looping from left to right. And then when it hits the side of the screen, it goes back to the beginning and playing some sort of a musical riff throughout. And then it's kind of up to you to think about it and decide what you need to do before you commit to an action, queue up all of your actions, and then watch it play out and see if you got the solution correct.
Okay, I think I understand. So you almost like, what I like about this is maybe you have some mechanic where you can, I don't know if the right word is like discover songs. Like there was a couple songs in Ocarina of Time that you kind of happen upon by just playing them on the ocarina. Maybe somebody tells you something or you see it somewhere and you're like, oh, I think I could play that particular song. But you're never explicitly tutorialized or there's no story beat that forces you into it. I think it could be really cool to almost like compose this Legend of Zelda songbook yourself. This would also be an excuse as good as Breath of the Wild was and is to get a little bit more of that more bombastic-y Zelda sound into the Zelda game.
It would be interesting if there's like hidden exits to some of these dungeons where, you know, you can solve the puzzles the way that they're intended to be solved and you can get through the dungeon. Maybe even some rooms have multiple doors that require different solutions to the puzzles. But maybe in one of the earlier rooms, you see a room that has three crystals in it that compose like 3/5 of a song that you have heard throughout the game. And if you're clever enough, then you can find crystals in two of the other rooms, bring them back there, and then set them in sequence correctly to play that song. And then you find like a secret exit at that point, you know, for just being clever.
Yeah, what I was thinking too in my head when you were initially pitching this was that you would almost end up with something that felt like the sequencer wasn't necessarily running, but as you do puzzles in a particular room, it maybe changes the puzzles in other rooms. And so you're trying to execute different sequences, which is triggering different layers of the puzzle. It makes me think of like, I don't know if you've ever played the mobile game The Room, not the Tommy Wiseau movie, but the fact that it is one single puzzle, but it's almost a puzzle machine that keeps moving and changing and transforming as you react to it. And having that potentially as like the foundation in a really complex Zelda dungeon, but kind of a single dungeon experience could be really neat. And then as you solve the right order of puzzles in a row, which create these different configurations, and maybe, you know, it takes 2 hours to set up an entire configuration. Then you play the song and you're discovering the songs that way.
Going back to something that you said earlier, that maybe solving a room can activate that room. I think there's something there as well, where maybe each room in a dungeon is kind of a component of an overall song, which I can imagine would get chaotic if you want to include dungeons that are more than like 4 or 5 rooms. Mm-hmm. But maybe to keep it manageable, again, going back to Sound Shapes, a game that I respect immensely and think has a ton of really clever design decisions, especially in how it relates to music and interactability with the music. In Sound Shapes, you can hear the sequence of any room that is immediately adjacent to the room that you're in. Oh. And so you can use that to kind of layer musical elements on top of each other without becoming completely overwhelming if you have like a 60-room dungeon. So, you know, maybe it is just, you know, at most it is what is in the room that you're currently in plus the 4 that are adjacent in any direction, which feels more manageable from like a composition perspective. And then obviously they wouldn't become active until you activate the room by solving the puzzle. So as you're going through the dungeon and as you maybe go backwards as well, then you hear more and more of the composition. And then in the end, it can kind of tie together elements of each of them into kind of an overall dungeon soundtrack.
Yeah, you could even like give the player context clues by maybe making certain, if you're hitting your sword or whatever tools you have against different elements, or as you shift elements around in the different rooms, they're triggering certain notes and certain ambient sounds, so you can get almost a sampling of what sort of note or pattern that room is going to generate when you're through with it.
Mm-hmm. So that's another decision that we have to make here, now that you mentioned that, is that do we allow the character to walk around in the dungeon, or are they a little bit more removed? You know, the way that I was thinking about it, and again, totally free to pivot from this if we find something better, is that it's almost like a Nightcrawler from the X-Men type thing where you're just kind of watching from above. You cue up your motion and then you see your character kind of zip between spots almost instantaneously, versus maybe they are able to walk around the dungeon and experiment a little bit, but then they can kind of lock in their series of actions, you know, just to give them a little bit of time to experiment to see what things do before firmly committing to what they want to do, because, you know, that might not give you the kind of experimental necessity that sometimes Zelda dungeons require.
Sure, but I feel like if you do go the stationary route, it kind of potentially opens you up to making this a Zelda VR experience. Not that that's necessarily something we'll get anytime soon. It depends on the range of expression for me. If you're going to do a Breath of the Wild set of Zelda physics-y tools and interaction, which I think is like maybe a little bit what we're talking about here, which is a grid of shrine rooms all mm-hmm. placed together, then I do like the push and pull, but it would certainly be more efficient to be able to just place these things. Yeah.
Yeah. We're coming up on a time limit now, so let's go ahead and close that one down. Let's end the sequence and come up with a name for that. Now, obviously, the best name, Crypt of the Necrodancer, is already taken.
Sorry. Yeah, unfortunately.
But we can come up with, I feel like there's a lot of, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a Zelda game, of course. It could be something entirely original. So let's see if we can come up with a clever name for this musical adventure. How about Trouble Clef?
The Legend of Zelda, the Troubled Clef.
Oh, that is, that's just goofy enough to work, I think. It would be one of the spinoffs, you know, a Triforce Heroes level yeah. game.
I would say this ends up on the DS, but now we all get it on the Switch, I guess.
I guess so. Well, all right. That's, I think that suits. Let's go to a pitch from our website. This comes from the community. This comes from Chesney Mooncalf, who says, a Splatoon-like game where, as a team, you have to recreate a painting against the clock. So you would have 5 minutes to recreate the Mona Lisa. Each team member has different attributes, such as greater variety of brush, size, and shape, or bigger range of colors. Can also have an opponent team where they are trying to destroy or otherwise sabotage your painting. Members of your team can break off from painting to repel the opponent team, but obviously, you then have fewer people painting. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Awesome. Thank you very much. Let's go ahead and start the clock on that one.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, thank you very much for writing in. I'm trying to think of...
I should state, before we get into this too much, we've done something
like
similar.
This.
But I feel like that makes it more interesting. I want to go back to Playwright episode 20, which we called Splatoon Paint by Numbers. And so
we were pitching, right?
Yeah, yeah, right. And so I'm trying to remember what the specifics of that were, because I don't want to exactly kind of recreate what we've done before. But I feel like it's interesting to have an idea that is similar, because we can try to cover similar ground without stepping on our toes previously. It kind of gives us some more borders and limitations, which I think make it more interesting in the first place. So let's let that guide our hand.
I think the challenge that we had run into with that previous pitch that I think is we have a second shot at redemption here. Judgment of the painting, right? Of how do we score the original thing without having preset spaces that you have to just fill in with a corresponding color?
You know what? Let's just to keep us honest on this one, to make sure that we don't overlap too much. We grounded the previous one in Splatoon's nomenclature, especially to the point where we ended up calling it Splatoon. It was essentially a minigame within Splatoon. Mm-hmm. Let's try to deviate. Let's come up with a different set of mechanics that we can use while keeping it kind of multiplayer and frantic in the same spirit of Splatoon. So maybe something that it has a little bit more of a paintbrush type of a feeling to it. I go back to, there was an experiment on Reddit a while back. They had a banner where each Redditor could choose a pixel to color, even if somebody else owned that or had previously colored that pixel. But I think it was that each player, I should say, got to choose one pixel and then their account would be kind of locked off from choosing any more, give it a color. And you saw entire communities kind of emerge around that that project to create collaborative paintings and words, and they would spell things out, and it was really interesting. And I love these kind of social experiments that occasionally Reddit does. So I don't know if there's some way we can kind of tap into that without losing the kind of frantic pace of Splatoon.
Well, I think one of the things that you could do is if this was almost like finger painting on a phone, like a, you know, I don't necessarily mean to go into the mobile space immediately, but I love the idea of either getting to see an image of a painting, you have a countdown timer. So there's actually a type of testing you can do in user experience where you give somebody 5 seconds to look at something and then you kind of gauge what they remember in that span of time. Let's say you get 5 seconds to stare at this thing. I think then you kind of enter into an interesting space of like, how well can a person recreate it with a color palette you give them that is curated? Now, this doesn't necessarily, I'll need help addressing the other team can mess you up or something. Mm-hmm. If you kind of get into that area of it, then you almost get it's a visual memory test of sorts, isn't it?
That's good. I like that we're moving to touch inputs. I think that suits this really well. What if you're given, like on an iPad screen, you're given a painting, but it's upside down, and every like 3 seconds you see the painting and then it flashes to the blank screen or the screen in progress of people on your team trying to recreate the painting, but right side up. And so the spaces in the middle are very easy because essentially you have just like a one-to-one, you know, what was in the painting while it's upside down is pretty much the exact paints that you're going to be putting in the painting when it's right side up. And so, you know, people fill in the middle quickly, people rush for that space, but then it's kind of up to you. You get the 3 seconds or the 2 seconds or however quick we want to swap between the images to memorize what was in a space, kind of project where it's going to be in the blank version without the reference picture. So it's kind of like assembling a puzzle, looking away from the picture on the box and trying to remember where the piece lands. And so you are able to maybe not swipe and paint, but maybe like pointillism, like you can tap and then wherever you tap, it drops like a drop of paint. And so maybe it's not a team-based thing. Maybe it's an all versus all type of thing where every correct bit of paint that you drop is a point to you. And then you are essentially trying to just cover as much of the field with correct paint before everyone else gets in there and claims all the good spots.
Oh, okay. So you're saying in that scenario, I have like 2 seconds to lay down what I'm going to lay down and then it's the next person's turn?
Not necessarily. Let's say that Let's say it goes on a 1 second rotation, 1 second of seeing the reference picture upside down, and then 1 second of seeing the game board, so to speak, where everyone is trying to, almost like a light, right, try to fill in those spaces. It's kind of a competitive thing where people, once it goes into the game board, then all of a sudden everyone's trying to tap as many of the pixels as they can to try to color them in. It becomes frantic. People are tapping on spaces that have just been covered by somebody else because they got there first. They're competing for the middle and for the edges because those are really easy to kind of keep mental track of. And then the more ambitious players are going for the no man's land kind of in between those spaces that are not being immediately taken by everyone else. So, you know, it's trying to be very quick and competitive in those moments and then memorize as much as you can in the, you know, 1 second in between.
What's cool about that is, so a mini strange story, over Thanksgiving, I was doing puzzles at a friend's house. They they invited a bunch of friends over for Thanksgiving and they put out puzzles, which I had never seen that before. But what the puzzle was essentially a bunch of tourism posters for a bunch of states. And do you know those kind of graphic postcards that say like Nevada and they all have really detailed...
How graphic are we talking?
Yes, it's graphic and it's from Nevada. It's just like all the letters have like different illustrations inside of them.
Yeah.
Think about how fun that could be in this format of like trying to fill in a palm tree, but also like make sure it forms the letter N.
You know, it becomes easier and easier to kind of determine where things are supposed to be as the course goes on, as the match goes on, because as players fill in more and more of the board, you have more reference shapes and everything. And so it becomes more competitive for the fewer and fewer spots that are left. Maybe players are eliminated throughout the match. You know, the bottom 10% get eliminated every 10 seconds or something like that. Ways to kind of keep it fast paced and competitive.
Yeah. So if you're too wrong too early, you're disincentivized. So you do want to be something of careful or something resembling careful.
That brings us to 10 minutes on that one.
Oh, man. I was just going to say, how do you mess other people up now? Yeah. I was just getting in the swing of it.
That could be interesting as well. You know, maybe intentionally placing some wrong moves, maybe deducing points from your own measure, but knowing that it's going to trip people up later. But anyways, That's back to the community. If you would like to contribute to that, then go to the website, comment on the episode, and we'd love to hear what you have to say about that idea or any of the others that we pitched today. So let's come up with a name for Chesney's pitch there.
There's no way this isn't taken, but I like the idea of, this is a common colloquialism for my job, pixel pusher. Maybe you're a pixel pusher, maybe a pixel thief even could be what this thing is. If you have a good steal a pixel
mechanic.
Pixel
pusher has a nice alliteration to it. I kind of like that. Or pixel painter. I feel like that's a little generic.
Pixel pusher is fun. Yeah. Especially if you can really like very carefully put them into place, then you get a cool little feeling like that.
All right. I'm cool with that. Let's call it pixel pusher. Anyways, thank you very much again, Chesney Mooncalf, for sending that in. We appreciate the contribution and hope to hear from you again. If you would like to submit something to the Playwright podcast to have us discuss it and break it apart and build it into something completely different than what you probably intended, then you can submit that to playwrightcast.com/pitch. You can email us playwrightcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast in all of those instances. It is PLAYWRITECAST.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off the album Blue Noise. I would say it's definitely still our theme song, but I don't listen to this crappy show.
What a positive note to go out on.
As Christmas is coming up, and I know that you have to do all this extra editing, I apologize. I just wanted to say thank you to my co-host, H. Ryan Heyman. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
You know, this show is so fun to do with you. We're coming up on, you know, we're, I guess we're like 20 episodes away from 100 episodes, but we're getting there.
Very close.
I know. And that's going to mean what, 299 pitches or something like that. So I love being on this journey with you. Happy holidays, my friend.
Oh, and you as well. Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. And so far, our streak has remained unbroken, which is kind of unbelievable.
And we might be putting it to the test this holiday season. We will do our damnedest to have episodes for you while you're maybe on a plane or at your parents' house and you just can't take staring at your old bedroom ceiling. Here you can listen to Playwright and make it through.
That's right. Well, maybe one day a Christmas miracle will happen and one of these games will actually be made. That would really be something. That would kind of make it all worth it.
I would troll Itch.io, but I'd be afraid to get too many pitching ideas.
All right. Well, let's go out with a miniature pitch today. Q, what do you have for us? Take us out on this, the day of Jesus' birth.
Fallout 76, but with a story.
Wow, that would really be something, wouldn't it? We will see you again on January 1st. Of 2019. Wow. Imagine that.
Unbelievable. New year, new you. New episode, new pitches.
That's right. Well, we'll see you next week.
Bye.